In 1776, it is believed by one and all that Paul Revere, on horseback, went yelling through the streets of Boston, "Here comes the British, here comes the British." But in fact, another story, a true story, never revealed because of its foolishness, that Paul Revere was first to have yelled, "Here comes the Colonel. Here comes the Colonel."
Yes, I remember those exciting years with Paul Revere, Ben Franklin, and the boys. How time flies. Well, welcome back to the second half of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science News Radio Network, exploring the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. I'm your host, I'm Colonel Mason. And in this segment, we're going to check on the rumor that we started last half hour, that since carbon is replacing silicon, is Silicon Valley going to change its name to Carbon Valley? Well, we're going to ask our guest today, Victor Saperstein. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments on the Voice of Reason. But right now, let's step over to our fountain of useless information, where we get to check on all of our scientific trivia. We have it right here in the set for that very reason. So today's query is coming right up.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help you?
Okay, old spirit of the fountain, here is today's query. Which animals won the most military medals during World War II?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell the others.
Aha, there's the answer. I thought it was dogs. It's pigeons. That's the animal that won the most military medals during World War II, was pigeons. Okay, we're back in the line now with our guest, Victor Saperstein of Lambda Solutions, talking about how nanoelectronics is moving us from silicon to carbon. So pretty soon Silicon Valley won't be Silicon Valley anymore. They're going to call it Carbon Valley. Is that what's going to happen?
That's right. And obviously these are still the leaders in that area. Because it's going to be the silicon-based wafers that are going to be the first substrate on which graphene flakes are going to be deliberately placed as these new, essentially nano, for nano circuitry.
So silicon isn't going to get out of it altogether. I mean, it's still going to be used as a substrate for these graphene substrates, right?
I think for the time being. It's very hard to say what's really in the future. There probably is always going to be a substrate onto which the graphene will be placed, as opposed to, you're not going to have a pure graphene sheet. Obviously, you want to deliberately place the elements of your circuit, and so it's going to be placed on something. But it's very interesting. I think the we're finding that the same element, which is the basis for life, which is carbon, is becoming our best tool for some of the most futuristic devices.
Give us an idea about what you're talking about. I mean, these breakthrough things, we're talking now about even smaller and nano circuits, and then these other exciting things that you just alluded to. Can we get specific?
Well, I think we're probably going to see more powerful and faster computers because more circuitry can be loaded into a system. And I'm not just talking about computers as we use them in laptops or desktops. Computers in terms of computer control devices, whether they be for the home, to be able to control appliances, robotic devices, implants for biomedical purposes, biomedical sensors. Whether it be used in for monitoring blood glucose, or whether it be used for transmitting signals and coordinating signals in a prosthesis. We don't need to create so much new applications or new vision. What we're able to do, I think, is see how some of the vision that we already have can now be realized.
That transmitting signals in a prosthesis, what you're talking about is an artificial arm being able to reach out and grab a pencil or a cup of coffee or something and actually feel the sensation. Is that correct?
Well, and right now that is what is being developed.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I think that there have been programs on TV, certainly, and on the internet, where essentially people are exerting neurologic control over their prosthesis, and the movement is actually generating impulses that the person can sense and can in fact feed back through their own impulses. So you can imagine the fine structure of the electrical components required for that.
Mm-hmm.
And not only will it make more of that possible, it's going to make it easier and therefore less expensive. I remember in the late 1970s, somebody mentioning to me, there's no reason why every movie can't just be digitized and you'd be able to sort of request it on your TV whenever you want.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that did not become a reality until, 5-10 years ago?
Yeah.
Okay. And it's not because the idea wasn't there, but the ability to realize it at a reasonable price.
Yeah, I was told in the 1980s that there would never be a time that we would have video telephoning, that the two twisted pair just couldn't possibly handle the bandwidth that was needed to do that. And of course, right now there's video conferencing, and we figured out how to do it now.
Oh, as a matter of course, in terms of business, because Lambda Solution has a worldwide customer base.
Mm-hmm.
We always try to communicate through systems that utilize the computer, whether it be Skype or any other service that allows us to do video conferencing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a routine manner of doing business and providing customer service.
So we're seeing so many things that we only dreamed about before coming true at a faster pace than in years gone by, and the pace is exponential because we keep making things smaller and more power in our computers, is what you're saying.
Yes, but I think getting back to what we initially started talking about, which mm-hmm. was the revolution in solar. We're all, at wit's end over the issues of energy, the environment, the utilization of solar energy has become all the more important, which is one of the reasons that many countries spend an enormous amount of money subsidizing those industries. Unfortunately, the U.S. has been behind on that, and hopefully this will change. But as we can create the materials, whether they be silicon-based, carbon-based, or combinations of the two, for being able to take solar thermal and solar energy in general and create electricity in an efficient manner, that is really going to be what's going to change really the face of the energy equation.
I want to explore that a little further, Victor, because we've got people on this program who say nuclear is the future. It's going to be nuclear fission is going to be our only source we're going to rely upon for energy. And then we've got people say, no, we've got to worry about right now about clean coal, because we've got to clean up all this coal that's being used and sequester the carbon that it produces. And then we've got other people with other energy solutions like algae and all those sorts of things. And you're saying that really, you know, Rick Smalley, the father of modern-day nanotechnology, had said that harvesting the energy from the sun is where we need to get it, because all of our energy comes from the sun. And you're kind of agreeing with that. You're saying that the solar collectors, photovoltaics and other things, are actually going to be the answer. Is that right?
Well, you know what, Colonel? I think that there is no the answer. I think that's probably not the way to view it. I think our president was right in putting forth a template for both near, mid, and long-term solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can't put our eggs in one basket. I think there. Is I think LG is a is going to be an important energy source for the future in the near and midterm.
Well, we have to have something to make jet fuel from, I guess. So we're going to have some sort of combustible, and I guess solar can't handle that. So that makes a point.
That's right. I mean, there are going to be a variety of fuel needs, and you know, so I think when you talk about nuclear, it's probably going to be nuclear versus solar, and then the question would come up, well, where does clean coal come in? But in terms of actually having combustibles for jet planes, cars may end up being more electric. There are two issues here, though, Colonel. I mean, there's the environmental issue, and then there is, in fact, the energy / economic issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd rather not get into the environmental ones right now. I think it's critical, and I'm not dismissing it,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes it complicates the discussion. I think solar is the future, but it may be a long way off.
Really? I thought you had some breakthroughs that you were going to tell us about today, some astounding things that are happening with solar.
There are. I mean, the efficiency need for solar needs to at least be another probably 10 to 100 times what it is now.
Hmm.
And the companies like Lambda Solutions who can provide monitoring systems on the level of milliseconds so that materials can be analyzed as they are produced are enabling those technologies. And we're very proud of that. But still more research needs to be done by people on the material end so that we can increase the efficiency. I think an amalgam of silicon and carbon-based technologies may in fact produce that increase in efficiency. And what we're going to find is that there will be a slow but accelerating deployment of solar. And what we might find in 10, 20 years is that it actually becomes the dominant new source.
Well, I mean, we'd have to have solar collectors that are don't take up acre upon acre upon acre upon acre, or either that, or I guess on the roofs of all these buildings is the dream right at the moment, maybe.
I mean, but you know, I don't think anybody reasonably wants to solve this problem by living under a giant umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why efficiency has to be the goal. This has to be done without covering the surface of the Earth, practically.
Yeah.
And right now, the efficiency, the number of megawatts that can be produced per acre, let's say, is just not sufficiently high. Mm. But it's moving, and it's changing quickly. And that it's changing so fast that I think it'd probably be wrong-headed making predictions about when we'll be there. I mean, just like people said in the 80s, we would never have the bandwidth for video phones.
Yeah.
You know, the 20 years later, they're commonplace. Mm-hmm. So I think we see the trajectory. It's just hard to extrapolate what the shape of that curve is going to be. I'm a firm, if you want my own personal opinion, I feel the future is going to belong to solar and nuclear. They are cleaner. I think they have the opportunity to be the most efficient form. I think coal, clearly, it's abundant. We have large sections of this country whose economies are based upon that employment. And I think we shouldn't be cavalier about dismissing that, because I think we're talking about people's livelihoods and a historical culture. But that can't hamstring us either. And we need to start moving.
But solar is clean, where nuclear is not, and coal is not. So solar seems to be the ideal, if there's any way in the world of really realizing this. And you seem to think there is, but you're unwilling to put a prediction about when we're going to reach the epitome of what we can collect with solar.
I would think that it's probably 10, minimum of 10 years away.
Really?
Which I don't think is so long.
That's close. It takes that long to get a nuclear power plant online.
Yeah. I think in 10 years we're going to see really significant breakthroughs in solar. And will it have reached an end point? Certainly not. Okay. But I think in 10 years, we will have achieved major changes. Nuclear is not clean only because of the nuclear waste.
Mm-hmm.
And Colonel, I'm a firm believer where there's a will, there's a way. I think that with the present problems in the Gulf, I think one of the lessons that we've learned is that, or we should have learned, is that the government needs to play a pivotal and primary role in creating the right systems. We, for 30 years, did nothing about nuclear. In that period of time, had the government been properly funding ways of recycling nuclear material, coming up with better ways of disposal, and really funding that effort, we'd be there.
Well, the nuclear people point out that nobody's died yet from any commercial industrial nuclear waste. The deaths have occurred from the misuse of the waste that has happened with the military. And they're saying that nuclear waste isn't a problem, that it's a nice problem to have because it goes away the longer we ignore it, which seems to be a little cavalier to me. And no one can answer the question about what we're going to do in the storing of nuclear waste, which is a main concern of mine.
I think that needs to be researched. And that's what I'm talking about. I think the government needs to take on the primary responsibility of coming up with that solution. I don't think it should be anybody else's responsibility other than the government's. If industry wants to make a contribution to those discoveries, that's great. but I don't think we as a people should rely on others. Listen, the fact matter is that France and Japan get most of their electricity from nuclear. And, you know, there does not appear to be a problem there. The issues, as you know, are as much political as anything. And, you know, I live in the New York area, and invariably every year or two, some local politician will come up with the idea that there isn't a proper evacuation plan, and there are demonstrations, and, you know, it's sort of silly. I mean, we need to come up with a consensus, and we need to start moving beyond this kind of political paralysis, which I think that, you know, can serve as an impediment towards any of these. We need to, I think programs such as yours become extremely important, and I'm not doing this saying that just because you're on the other end of the line. One of the biggest problems in this country is scientific literacy. Mm-hmm. And the more people are understand the nature of science, the nature of the process of scientific research, how to best evaluate what's real and what's not, what's promising and what's not, the more we have that literacy, the easier it's going to be to form a political consensus.
Well, that point you made a minute ago about commissions and things like that, being able to figure out how things can be with nuclear waste and with oil collection and that sort of thing, and leadership, kind of reminds me of friends who get all involved with conspiracy theories about the Trilateral Commission and about how things are secretly being run in some sort of an underworld cloak and dagger shadows type of thing. And what the real truth is that nobody's running anything, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, in fact, the big secret is that it's a black hole. There's nothing there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no there. But you know what? You make a great point, Colonel. Let's not call it a commission. In fact, it should be something that is extremely public.
Mm.
You know, whether it be the whether it be something housed within the Nuclear Regulatory Commission or some related institution within government, but it has to be very public, very publicly funded, its mission very well defined. There will always be conspiracy theorists. You know, this seems more a function of human nature.
Yeah. Well, of course, we're out of time. Victor Saperstein, Lambda Solutions, thank you so much for being with us again. You're always so informative, and we look forward to your return.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
I think on top of it all, I think we're going to be able to do things smarter and more efficiently, use our resources better. The young kids coming out of college today are tremendously excited. They just need guidance on where to go, and we need to help get these young people into companies so they can really be major contributors. The enthusiasm is at the highest I've ever seen in terms of college kids and what they want to do. So I'm excited.
This is Jonathan Shapiro. I'm the CEO of the Texas Institute.
So you decide. Okay. Has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow. I am waiting for you.